It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Bishop and the Bear, the Bishop and the Bear, and to the delight of everyone, they are here to share jokes and rants and guests and things. Who knows what any fun they'll bring?
Not affiliated with the Mad Bishop and Bear pub at Paddington Station.
The Bishop and the Bear, bats beyond compare, buckets of savoir faire. The Bishop and the Bear.
Well, welcome back to the old Bishop and Bear. And a reminder, of course, before we start, that the Bishop of Bear this week is brought to you in association with NordVPN. NordVPN stands as the unrivaled leader in digital protection, offering exceptional speeds, impenetrable encryption, cutting-edge features, and an unparalleled commitment to privacy. Full details and a Gorilla special offer are in the notes accompanying this podcast. And remember to use the special Gorilla order page, nordvpn.com/gcradio. Well, we've got two fabulous guests in the old Bishop and Bear on our bar stools of bravado. It's the lads from the cricket podcast, the podcast with the name that they spent literally years thinking about. And smiling there as ever, because every time I crack the same joke. Jack, what can I get you to drink? Jack Hope?
It'd be a pint of water this morning, 9:30 a.m. It's a little early for a podcast.
You don't tell people that. As far as they know, we're just in a pub.
Oh yeah, like a Wetherspoons pub. That's what I'm thinking. If the two of you had a joint, it would be an open all hours.
Can you hear your feet sinking to the carpet as you try and lift one leg and the other leg?
You can get full English and a Bloody Mary for, you know, sort you out at 9:30 in the morning.
And a little bit later, coffee.
Okay. A coffee. We can get you a coffee. The erudite and poetic Max Rowe Brown.
Oh, that's
Max,
very
what
kind.
Can I get you?
Well, I was going to say, actually, you know, we've just come off the back of a bit of a lock-in, haven't we? So I'm a bit full of beer. So maybe just a neat scotch to see the night or the morning.
We do the finest single malts here. I think a Glenfiddich, one of the finest products of the Spey, for you, and we'll get that over to you right now. So, well, let's start. Funny we should have you two on. It seems to have a bit of a T20 flavour, some of it. Some things we're going to talk about. That crazy India and Afghanistan game. And it's, of course, unique currently, I believe, conclusion. It was Pakistan, New Zealand, two to go. That seems to be going to form. Going to question the Big Bash a little bit. It's got bigger and bigger, but has it got better? We'll get into the SA20, not in too much detail, because the Bear and I have to confess at least that we know very little about it, and are hoping that you two do. The Adelaide Test seemed to go to form. Some interesting news on who is finally covering the India series. My notes here say drinking TNT. Oh, because it's TNT, and because that is a line from a Muddy Waters song called Ready, drinking TNT and smoking dynamite.
Nice.
Which would summarise this podcast, probably. And we'll, of course, we'll talk a little bit about the test. Let's start with that Super Over, guys. Did we all see it live? because I was lucky enough to. It was fucking nuts.
So I couldn't find it live. I don't know which channel it was on, but I did catch up with it afterwards, and it is the whole sort of last hour is mayhem. It was a really fantastic match. A little bit of a shame for Afghanistan. I mean, like in those ones, you really want the underdog to come through, don't you? And it felt like they had at least two bites at that particular cherry.
Well, 20 something before, weren't
they?
Yeah,
along with a bunch of cherries that they'd failed to take the bite out of in the first place.
So, you know, a real classic T20. It's probably not India's A squad, particularly on the bowling side. But still, yeah, what an absolute thriller.
But they'd also won the first two in that series comfortably enough, both by 6 wickets. Rohit had got, I think he'd batted a grand total of 3 balls. Yep. Second baller in the first one and a first baller in the second one. So no runs at all. And then he smacks whatever it was, 121 or 69, didn't he, along with Rinku Singh to lift them to score that 20 frames that you'd never have believed. But honestly, I've got to ask, with my slightly sceptic head on, and I know you guys are probably going to go, you're talking bollocks, it just had a whiff of contrivance, or did it? I guess the whole debate was around he retires hurt, or did he retire out? No one seems to know. And then mysteriously, like Lazarus, up he gets again to bat in the second super over. It just seemed a bit strange to me. What was going on there?
Well, I think they just fucked it, didn't they? I think the umpires just forgot the rules, or didn't know the rules, or got it wrong. I think it wouldn't be the first time.
Or hadn't experienced. Well, there was no precedent.
No. Well, Jonathan Trott in the post-match interview was saying that there was a lack of communication with both the sides. He was saying that they, they wanted to use the same bowler again for the second super over, and then were told that they couldn't, which wasn't something that they were aware of in the first place. As it happened, I think Fareed Ahmed Boulder did put a decent effort up in the second super over. But I would not be surprised if India just, I don't know, maybe didn't know, or perhaps made it appear that they didn't know that Rohit wouldn't be able to bat if he retired out, and then said, oh no, he retired hurt, or pleaded ignorance and they let him off, or something.
It's like the legal system. In what's the law of precedent, isn't it? And there was no precedent for we've suddenly got a second super over.
At least it happened in a dead rubber bilateral T20 series that almost no one cares about.
Except a few Indians in Bengaluru by the sound of the crowd and by the look of the crowd. Bear, you were going to say, I know you're a big T20 fan.
Oh, well, I knew nothing about this until you put it into the thing and said, oh, we're going to talk about this game. And then I went and looked at the result and read the report and looked at the commentary on ESPN Cricket Info. It did seem a bit mad at the end. Probably a T20 worth watching, actually, which is...
It wasn't a bear game, let's put it that way.
Put it that way, it wasn't a bear game, which is probably why I wasn't watching it, because every time I fucking watch it... I mean, I've watched a bit of the SA T20, and the game I watched, some team had 220, thought, oh, this could be a good game, and then there were 3 wickets and about 5 overs, and you thought, oh, fuck that, turn it off, you know. And this is one of those rare games that goes down to the line, and looked like it would have been an absolute cracker to watch, but no, I didn't see it.
It's worth catching up on the highlights just to see Rohit Sharma do the world's slowest switch hit.
Yes, yeah, he did. I mean, and it was extraordinary. I had my other half desperate to go out. She needed me to take her somewhere, and literally it was halfway through the second Indian
super
over.
But it's India Afghanistan, don't you understand?
In a pointless bilateral T20.
It didn't work well. I ended up quickly getting the highlights onto my phone, and then said, oh, I've got to go to the loo. Sorry, we can't leave till I've gone to the loo. Old man, anyway, perfectly plausible excuse. So I basically managed to see the last 3 balls in the loo so I could convince my other half that I really, really wasn't quite ready to go out, even though she had a train to catch. But there we go.
Is next week's prostate exam worth it?
Well, I haven't gone that far. Although it's all the rage now. I mean, look at the king.
Yeah.
If the king's doing it.
Well.
So yes, it was extraordinary. Dead rubber, a whiff of controversy. But you get that with India, and I genuinely think there is a bit of precedent in there. The fact that there wasn't one. It's a bit like countbacks in World Cup finals. You know, boundary campus. It's like no one's done it before. It's like someone's making it up on the spot to me. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but it just felt like that, Max, didn't it?
Well, I say it felt like it. It's probably exactly what happened, isn't it? That's cricket.
Well, yes, sometimes it is. That's it for India, I think, until June in terms of international T20 cricket. But given that you've got the IPL, do you guys think that, you know, whilst other teams are frantically trying to organise T20 internationals so that they're match ready, Indian's top players are just constantly playing T20s. They kind of don't need it. Do you think that's a fair assumption?
That's one point of view. The other point of view would be to say the IPL is probably the most grueling 3 months that you can go through in the cricket calendar. Not necessarily in terms of like minutes played, of course, but the fact that you're sort of living in a hotel and
yes,
the focus is on you 24/7. And if you're in an Indian player or a local player, there's no, you can't jet off with a little niggle with a couple of weeks to go in the tournament if your team gets knocked out and get a bit of an R&R in at home. No, you just have to live in that bubble. And then you get on a plane. And then the national media, with all of the IPL history that's just built up, will be on your back going into that tournament, whether that's good or bad. I think that's probably a little bit of a tough situation to be in. I would say that's not ideal preparation. That looks very much like a sort of mid-2000s England football team coming off the back of a tough Premier League season.
Was that the golden generation?
Yeah.
Beckham, Lampard, the underachievers.
Yeah, and in some ways, there are some comparable cricketers there as well, in that maybe because of the IPL, a few of the players in that India side are slightly overrated when it comes to T20 cricket. Maybe not as much of a golden generation in that format relative to the competition as they are in Test cricket and ODIs, which I think
Lampard,
probably say,
Gerard, you shouldn't play them together. Dropped that little bomb. Who's overrated?
Well, I mean, yeah, but they would be two names. I don't know whether they'll make the squad. But you'd assume Virat will, but King Legend, his time might be up. Rohit Sharma, potentially. Yeah, I know he had a really great game here, but
in a dead rubber, having got two ducks before it.
Yeah, against a weak Afghanistan side, to be honest, as well. They played very well, but this is not the bells and whistles Afghan side. This is a bilateral make up the numbers Afghan side. Yeah, I think there's a couple in there like that. Obviously, at the other end, you've got Surya Kumar Yadav, Jasprit Bumrah, and Hardik Pandya, if he's fit. But
again, if he's fit, he's always bloody injured, that boy.
Yeah. Is that his full name now?
Hardik Pandya, if he's fit. Yeah, it may as well be, right? Yeah, and to be honest with him, his bat is diminished in T20 cricket. It's different to how it was. Whether his return to Mumbai Indians will galvanise him. Or not, it remains to be seen. But India went out the last World Cup, the last T20 World Cup, because they were playing an old-fashioned version of the game. England pounded them, humiliated them, basically. And will they have moved on in enough time? Or in the time between those two tournaments? I don't know. I think that the jury's out, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, do you not? Well, this is the problem with it all, though, isn't it? I mean, they play international tournaments like they play the IPL, and I can't imagine the IPL will change that much. Partly down, isn't it? I mean, the way that the IPL is played out is partly down to the way the wickets play out and all this kind of shit. The fact that you have dew in the evening, which kind of dictates to a certain degree how the game is played. And then you're going to go into an international tournament where people have different ideas and different wickets, and they could, same thing could happen again.
And the other thing with that is that none of the Indian players play in any of these other tournaments. From a learning what the conditions are like point of view, they're probably a step behind. I mean, the USA is a bit of a wild card here, and means that might not be as much of a difference. But some
Pakistan versus India in New York, that's going to be interesting.
And the other thing is they play quite a lot less T20 cricket than other players in the world at the moment. I mean, I think Butler played 40 odd T20s last year across different places. Virat Kohli would have played about 20. It's a big difference in experience at the top level of the game.
BCCI stops them competing in some tournaments, doesn't it?
All tournaments.
Who the players? Yeah. So they can't. They literally can't go to the SA20 if they wanted to. But you know, Butler will. Will Jacks will. Phil Salt will. And they're getting better and better.
Yeah. And they're smacking it all over the place.
Yeah. Well, okay, so that's it's interesting to hear you say that. The other thing about India, of course, is how well do they travel by and large? And I know this applies more to test matches. I mean, you look at that ridiculous record in tests at home, but they tend not to travel so well, as we saw in South Africa, particularly in the first test series. You know, they are playing on harder bouncier West Indian wickets, which do take some turn, as we saw recently in the England series.
Yeah, not exactly quick. A lot of West Indies wickets now are really slow.
Yeah, that's true. I suppose it does work more into their favour, but it's not home advantage for them, that's for sure. As we saw. Well, let's move on. Did you catch any of the Pakistan New Zealand series? So that one really is the ultimate low key under the radar. You have to be a cricket fan to kind of know it's going on series, isn't it, Max?
Yeah, and that will probably align with about how much of it I've paid attention to. I am a real cricket fan, but I guess not that much. I'm aware that it's happening, and that is about the extent of my experience.
It just seems to be going to... When I looked at the sides, Jack, the one thing I thought was interesting, probably halfway decent bowling attack for Pakistan, but once you get down past four or five, they're going to really struggle. If the top order doesn't click, they're just going to fall apart. And that is exactly what has happened in the first three of those games. They've just collapsed. I mean, they're batting... what's his name? Chap who played for Middlesex. Shaheen Shah Afridi. He's been batting at seven, I think. You think, well, hang on, that doesn't...
That suggests it's not the
strongest mid to lower.
But he's
order.
The captain, isn't he? So he's
yeah, that's what's happening there. Yeah. I feel like that's nobody being honest with the captain about what their real ability is. And because he put the time in doing the admin, ringing round Azam Khan and Rizwan the night before to make sure that they turned up in time for the meet, no one's going to ask any questions. Like, he got the game on. So that's where I come from there. The only thing I know about this series is that Finn Allen went bananas.
He did, yes.
In one of the games.
And took an extraordinary catch, didn't he? Or was that in that series?
I wouldn't know about that, but I did see 132.
The domestic catch where the guy was, where he was sliding towards the boundary through his shoulder as he was on his way over.
That was an unbelievable catch. I didn't know that was Finn Allen, but 137 off 62 balls is impressive, I think. I think
one of the interesting things about cricket at the moment is it's like the history of other sports. You know, there was the 4-minute mile by Roger Bannister, and everyone went, "Oh, phew, no one's going to do that again." You know, literally every time you set a new benchmark or record, someone's going to beat it. I mean, clearly there's a mathematical point in cricket whatever it is, you divide 100 by 6. Is that 17?
Yeah.
Is it 17 balls?
I think it's 17.
But you think at some point it's going to get close to it. Because the in a way, the beauty of it is it can always just be beaten.
The fastest one I can think of, Will Jacks in a T10 game, got 125 balls. Which not an official match. I think it was like a Surrey Reserves v Lancashire Reserves match.
Got what? About as unofficial as you can get.
How many balls?
I think in a T10 he got 100. So, you know, it's 30 or fewer. Then there's the AB de Villiers ton, isn't there, against West Indies, which was 20. Low 30s.
Was it low 30s? I thought there was one in the 20s. Am I being stupid?
Chris Gayle got a 30 ball 100, didn't he, in 2013 at the IPL, I think. The RCB against the Pune Warriors. There you go.
I feel like I'd know that. If we're talking 4-minute miles, I think that's the threshold, isn't it? 30 balls.
The 30 balls.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you get a 147 break in snooker, it's a big thing, but you know it can happen again and again and again. Whereas 30, you go, well, that's... You've got best part of 16 balls to still improve on that.
Exactly. So,
you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't happen.
You failed. Do better.
Yeah. Exactly.
I'm not satisfied.
No.
But what I find is interesting is that, exactly that, we're all cricket fans here, but I find cricket is coming, is definitely become, with all these T20 tournaments, has definitely become by like world football now. And there's all these fucking leagues and they're all on some channel somewhere. And if you're a really, really massive football head, you might watch Polish football somewhere. But the fact is, there's just too much of it.
Did you say Polish football?
Yeah.
You just liked on Polish.
That came into my head because when we were in the TV studio.
Did you get the plumbing done?
Years back. No. When we were in the TV studio years back, the channel that we were with was so cheap. They wanted some live coverage of football and they got, you know, really cheap coverage of Polish football. So that was on their channel. So that just won't count.
Well, actually, does sort of lead us on to one of the things we were very keen to chat to you two about, because I think we sort of sometimes joke that there's a bit of an age gap on guerrilla cricket. Why people think that, I have no idea. But
I mean, the repeated jokes about me being the Bears' son.
Yeah.
Well, actually, every time I see you, you just get that little bit more earth sign in your appearance.
You need to get your beard a little bit bigger there, man.
A bit fluffier.
That'd be fine. Yeah.
but you know, I guess I was thinking about it. There's the IL20 starting, isn't there? Fairly soon, if it hasn't already started. IL24 starts. Yeah. Is the global talent pool getting stretched so thin?
Yes.
That it devalues a lot of the... Well, there we go. There was my halfway through my rambling question. So, Jack, you clearly have a point of view. So yeah, tell us about it.
I think, aren't there like 50 English players playing overseas this year? Now, I don't know how good people are at maths, but I can tell you that that's not the number that fit into the best 11 for the England cricket team. So there's obviously some watering down happening there, and yeah, fair enough. England have got a really good talent pool, really deep, and it's the winter, so you can raid English players without having any conflict really with national boards or domestic clubs.
If they don't have central contracts, that's one of the reasons England rushed, I think, into central contracts at what seemed to be the most inopportune times during the World Cup, was that there were certain players they wanted to ring fence and give them enough to
yeah, but apparently that was all even then, them in, it had all been talked about before, and it had all been set in place.
Even then, a few people with central contracts, I would imagine, will end up at the IL20. They just won't be, you know, required in India. So there's loads of English players as a sort of test case here. And that obviously means that the talent pool is watered down. You're not, if you go to an IL20 game, going to watch international quality T20. That's what happens when Adam Rossington is one of your star players. It's no offence to Adam Rossington.
He does a job in the 100.
Very, very capable cricketer. But you're creating a different product there. And I think the model that they're going for is something like professional golf or professional cycling, whereby you have these kind of travelling circuses and each one of them will feature a handful of great players. I think there are some good West Indians in the IL20 coming across, maybe Dre Russell and Ryan. Well, they are quite old.
But they were there last time, because I remember catching it on the TV and watching a game that had Moeen Ali, Kyron Pollard, Dre Russ, and a whole bunch of people. It was like,
you have
exactly that. It was like a travelling circus.
You could almost put Formula One into that category.
But you could.
The ultimate sporting travelling circus, isn't it?
Last year, it didn't even get official ICC sanction as T20, did it? The IL20?
Yeah, there weren't enough domestic players, but they've changed the rules on that.
This year it's
a real tournament.
Yeah.
With some really shit players there, and then some old-timers. And this is the other thing, isn't it? It's like the fucking cricketer's graveyard going into this little fucking bandwagon.
Get over 35.
Serves its job. True, but it's like what's that? The Legends League in fucking India, you know? Get all these old boys. I suppose at the end of the career, they're still
capable.
Isn't
that the road safety tournament?
Yeah, well, yeah, it feels it is.
A, makes a lot of money for charity, and B, to be honest, you know, these players are.
Yeah, but do you?
A lot of them
see...
aren't legends. It stretches the definition of legend.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
Tremlett.
Yes, exactly. You have to slightly question that.
I'd go to see those guns.
Well, yeah, that would be a different reason to.
Monty Panesar.
How well his stats stack up?
Who wouldn't pay to see Monty Panesar at any age?
Yeah, but
to finish off my point, I think like if you go down this model, then you are accepting that there will be an expansion. Like, not every golf tournament is the Masters.
No.
But you need something to fill the TV time, and that's how it appears that the people who own a lot of these teams, and it is the same people who own
teams
across. Yeah, think they can make their money. I guess. I mean, like, I don't really know what the TV market is for the IL20. It's massive.
Well,
but
no.
It's underwritten by a oil state, isn't it? So
it's underwritten by a oil state. My theory on all this is that something like the IL20, the amount of gambling on cricket is fucking phenomenal. And I think a lot of these tournaments are there, and it's the Indian market, although gambling's officially illegal in India. Obviously, they got their fantasy shit, and obviously there's a lot of people who do illegal gambling as well. And I think it's primarily for that market, and that's why the Indians are in it, and that's why they own everything, because they think they just pump it out. And I think probably the TV rights for some of this stuff that's overseas doesn't actually cost that much. And they have a set price now, and producing TV is a lot less than it was before, right? So they go out there, they do all that, they hire the same fucking commentators, da-di-da-di-da-di-da, they pump it into India, and then people are playing Dream 11, and they're gambling on it, and there's a tie-in there, and they're all making fucking money out of it. And it's just a product for that. That's kind of how I feel about it. I mean, there's sport in there, but it does seem just a bit too much.
It is an interesting one, because I mean, it can't be, as Jack, I think you were alluding to, it can't really be about global TV rights when, you know, it's slightly, it's somewhat watered down, it's ubiquitous, just you know, and as we say, you know, we all love cricket, whatever particular formats we may favour, you know, around this bar, and yet how many of us are really going to sit down and go, oh great, the IL20's on, I'm going to watch that. And
that's
how I've been with the IL20,
maybe for comedy value.
I watched a bit of IL20 last year, because it was on BT, which is like
TNT now, remember?
Yeah, which is on my TV. I didn't have the Sky app, so it was handy to put on in the afternoon. Quality is pretty bad. I mean, I think you've got three or four local players who are miles off the pace. A few old boys who, you know, similarly wouldn't make a very serious tournament. And without a doubt, a few people just picking up a paycheck. Like, nobody really cares whether you win a tournament for the Desert Vipers. I would venture. Like, it's not a massive feather in the cap, is it? Most people in cricket don't know who the Desert Vipers are, where they're based, who owns them, what league they play in. Are they the team owned by the Glazers?
The Glazers have got a team. I assumed it was some Indian team.
There's one random team owned by the Glazers.
Oh my
god! Who bought the team based on a mobile phone Zoom call, where they did a stadium tour on the Zoom call. I think during the World Cup that Australia won. So what was that, 2019 or 2020? Like, all these things. It's all a bit naff. Where the money comes from, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some local money that gets pumped into it to make it attractive.
But the players are on stupid money, aren't they? I mean, some of the players are on $500,000 and shit. So
yeah, so I think that's where the money comes from in that one. I would say this is one of the tournaments that I think is particularly dull to me. I've got no interest in watching cricket there.
It's happening at the same time as the SA20.
But the South African one I actually quite like. I think the South African one's decent. You get, I mean, the just visually, there's nobody at these IL20 games. Like, there's nobody in the crowd. The SA20, you're looking at 80% plus capacity. You've got a band.
They bet the farm on it.
They absolutely bet the farm on it. South Africa. The tickets are cheap. They're promoting it properly. The players are engaged. You've got a really good local talent pool in South Africa
to keep the local talent, the best local talent back.
Yeah. And you could criticise that decision as much as you like, and I think it's probably a fair criticism. But if you're looking at what's a successful route to producing one of these tournaments, what they've done in South Africa is good, and what they've done I don't even know which country it's in, the UAE, I would say is bad. You know, for the players,
usual places, yeah. I think.
For the players, though, you get loads of cash, whichever one you end up at.
The Glazer connection makes me think you could actually do some quite interesting cross-fertilisation and not necessarily weaken either team. You could put a couple of United players in the Desert Vipers and take a couple of cricketers and whack them at the back for United, and I can't think either team would be that much worse. Well, be that much worse for it, but there we go. Maybe that's the coming. The thing used to be every cricketer played football, and every football was a footballer as well. They played football in the winter and cricket in the summer.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the old model, wasn't it?
That's true. Even fucking both of them did, didn't he? Played for Scunthorpe or something.
We just have a short break, chaps, to remind people who our kind sponsor is. There's a little bit of a chat there, and I had trying to figure out why NordVPN was so good. Just a reminder that this Bishop and Bear is brought to you in association with NordVPN, working for a safer and better internet.
Hold on, Tone. What exactly is NordVPN and why would I use it?
Well, Bear, NordVPN is a service that gives you safe and private access to the internet. By encrypting your connection, it hides your IP and online activity from spying eyes and keeps your data safe from cyber criminals. And yes, it means you can listen or watch what you want, where you want, anywhere in the world.
And none of that geo-blocking nonsense.
Yep, that's it. And it saves you money too. You can change your virtual location and sign up for subscription services via other countries and pay a cheaper price.
So it's a good deal.
Yep. You can get over a 50% discount depending on your package. Plus, 4 months completely free when you order at nordvpn.com/gcradio. nordvpn.com/gcradio. Everything you need to know is in the podcast notes. It's so simple, even those of us who aren't technical experts like I am can use it.
Ha! Marvellous, Tone. I just want to say, I further on that. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, you were talking about players who, you know, wouldn't make it into anything. You know, I was reading one of your links last night. It's like Laurie Evans has left the BBL and it's big news to go and play in the fucking IRT20. And it's just like, Laurie Evans, he came into the sofa once years ago and that was when he was young. So he can't be that young anymore. You know?
He is quite good.
Is he a really... He may well be quite good, but, you know... And it is kind of weird that a player would leave the latter. I mean, I don't know if Laurie Evans is a team that's got sort of anywhere near the final. Well,
he's been absolutely smoking it.
Has he?
In the BBL. Yeah, I think he's hit like 82 or 34 or something in one game, and another like 70 odd off 30. He's been, he's been lighting it up.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the BBL.
But he's not going to stay there, though, for the final, is he? Because he's going to get paid more to go fuck off to the ILT.
His main income, I think, is step one underwear modelling. So I think his.
Is it? Money is that man. For real?
Yeah, well, he models step one. Yeah.
Step one is that. I'm presuming that's an
bamboo underwear.
Bamboo, I
very
mean,
expensive
that must be uncomfortable.
Pants, Tony.
Bamboo underwear.
Telly, yeah.
Wasn't there a Chinese torture they used to make you sit on bamboo and wait for it
weirdly,
to grow? Isn't that the same sort of thing?
Our next door neighbour is nicknamed Step One because we never see him, but B, one day during a pandemic, when they used to advertise those Step One things, and then a Chafe Free or whatever, he's quite a fat lad. We got a delivery for him from Step One. So ever since he's been nicknamed Step One next door to us.
It's not made of bamboo, is it?
Yeah, it's bamboo fibre.
Bamboo underwear.
Everything's bamboo these days.
I've had bamboo socks. They were quite
comfortable. Yeah, you get bamboo recycled cups and shit like that because it's all biodegradable.
Tell you what, you wouldn't bend over near a hungry panda, would you? Jesus Christ. But there we go.
I reckon you could outrun him.
Isn't that the old joke about the bear? Why are you taking your shoes off? All you have to do is run faster. He said, no, all I have to do is run faster than you. That was the joke, wasn't it? Something like that about a bear. I'm sure I paraphrased it really badly. Going back to the BBL, though, to rescue myself from that blind alley. they've made the BBL bigger and longer.
No, they haven't.
Yes, a couple of years ago they did.
Yeah,
they've trimmed it back again, have they?
Yeah,
back to the normal. It was the bigger Bash League, and now it's the big Bash League.
Now it's the slightly smaller, it's back to the ordinary.
It's back to 40 games now. You didn't even read the article you sent me, did you?
Well, I was so busy sending you all the links, because when you asked me, I don't, quote unquote, I don't watch T20, have you got any links? And I sent him one link, which was basically the Crick Info homepage.
Yeah, that was a bit smarmy, wasn't it? You just sent me a link to Crick Info. I could have figured that out myself.
And then I weakened and put them all in the meeting request. But I do watch the Big Bash, because I used to get up early in the morning, when my lads were little, and it used to be quite fun, and bacon sandwich, stick on the Big Bash. But now when I look around the crowds, they don't seem to have the same intensity. Is it fair to say it's losing its luster?
I think it's bounced back this year. So they as the group stage finished, I think that's where we're at. We're always finishing.
Yeah, the big yeah. four have been nailed their
places, there was an Australian article that was released a few hours ago that I've got up here, and it says, I assume this is true, that the average crowd is up 27%. 800,000 people attended live. That meant the average crowd was over 20,000 for the first time in a couple of years. I think TV ratings went up as well, and that's without, according to this article, and I think according to facts as well, without a lot of the test players being available, because the scheduling of the test series in Australia this year overlapped quite significantly. So the tone of this article is very much like, oh, it's gone very, very well here, but next year it'll be even better when Steve Smith plays. And I think they're doing something to try and unoverlap it with the IL T20 so they don't lose stars like Laurie Evans and Jamie yeah. Overson.
Yeah, I'm also reading an article from ESPN, which is saying that they're, of all the four finalists are losing someone to the IL T20.
Yeah.
Laurie Evans, Sam Billings, Colin Monroe, James Vince, Jamie Overton, Adam Hose.
I think they've got quite a good formula. I think in Australia they've got quite a good formula for handling this, because I don't think they're setting the Big Bash up as the best T20 cricket tournament in the world. I don't think that's how they market it. I think they market it a little bit more like Tony was saying, maybe without the bacon sandwich and with a KFC bucket head.
But I don't put one of those on while I'm having breakfast.
I think that's more the vibe. It's like, you know, bring your kids 3 hours, they can run around, you don't really have to pay attention to them, have a couple of schooners and go home. It's a pretty cheap night out.
It's what the 100 probably should have been.
Yeah, and it may well end up being what the 100 ends up being, because the big bash started, I think, probably slightly more seriously from the perspective of wanting to challenge the IPL. But you don't hear that too much from Cricket Australia anymore. You hear them talk about it as basically an entertainment product, and I think they've put quite a lot of eggs in the local domestic player basket, building up some of the players that aren't going to make the Australia team, frankly. Jordan Silk's fielding. You see, how many snapshots of that have you seen on Twitter over the last 6 weeks, in diving to stop someone on a boundary? Or Josh Weatherall has hit one into the top deck. And that creates, I think, a little bit of excitement around the players that sort of are actually there. So rather than having a strategy built around getting Andre Russell to turn up for three matches, or it's a little bit further back in time, they were trying to lure AB de Villiers over, weren't they? And it never quite worked out. I think what they're doing in Australia works. Probably means that the cricket is maybe not quite as good, and when English players who we would consider second tier go over there, they do tend to dominate. But it doesn't seem like anyone's complaining. Like, it doesn't seem like the crowds are disappearing because it's Laurie Evans and not AB de Villiers. Like, it seems pretty energised in Australia.
Exactly, they want to watch good cricket, maybe, and that's what they want to see. And if the cricket's good enough, then that's good enough for them.
Yeah. They want to see local players. I think there's a strategy here that seems to be working.
I think it has a personality about it, which possibly because I've watched more of it, I kind of got into. Which I think ties in with exactly everything you're saying. It has a sort of its brand identity to me is very clear.
Australian,
in a kind of a good Aussie way. I have to say, it was Messy Jez who actually put me right. I genuinely, for years, was utterly convinced that you had to eat the fried chicken and then put the bucket on your head. I didn't realise that they actually gave the buckets away, sort of nicely clean on the inside. I always used to think, what happened to all that horrible fat?
Idiot.
From the chicken pieces.
The world's greasiest giant fez.
Yeah, exactly. Nasty.
Exactly. But there you go. No, well, so I am a bit of a Big Bash fan. You mentioned the test match. So let's kind of sort of drift onto that, I think, out of fun. Did anyone expect anything more than 3 days for the poor old West Indies travelling to Australia.
No.
Nope. I think they did quite well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm honest.
Well, to bowl them out for 280 after getting around. Yeah. If they got Travis Head, I don't know if he was dropped or gave any chances before he got his 118 or whatever it was, but yeah, if they got him out, they might have actually had a lead. But there you go.
Yeah, well, it was, who was the lad who got
Mar Joseph,
who was phenomenal, and he made some runs, didn't he, in the first innings? Got his fifer. So you know, out of, and it was not a full strength West Indies side. I know Colin Graves this week was, you know, possibly on the back of that, being very vocal about the inequitable distribution of global wealth of the game. And they are. They do look like a side. You know, we always say this with the West Indies to a certain extent. It just seems so sad for those of us that have such good memories of their invincibility and the way they completely almost revolutionised the game to a certain extent. The sort of fast bowling and the magnificent batting of the likes of Bib Richards and Clive Lloyd to be sort of reduced to kind of cannon fodder. That apparently it cost them the best part of $2 million to send a team there, and they don't get anything like that back from going, was Colin Graves' model. So he's argument. So he's almost going, why would we even do that? Where's our only incentive for us to send a team?
Well, I don't even know if they have a team that they could send. To be brutally honest, I mean, interesting with this. I'm not predicting a West Indies revolution or a comeback in any way, but I think the bowling attack that they've got now is pretty exciting. I think it's one of the best bowling attacks from a test perspective that they've had at least in the last decade. The batting's pretty threadbare, but they're not the only nation in world cricket that are like that. And I think you have to factor in as well that they're travelling to Australia where everybody gets battered. It's not like they've gone, well, it's not like Sri Lanka have turned up in the West Indies and done this. It's a slightly different scenario, and I think there are probably some positives you can take from it. I don't know if you know much about the Shamar Joseph story.
He used to be a bodyguard, a security guard, didn't he?
I think he was a security guard. He started off as a lumberjack. This is why I believe. I mean, I'm sure as he does more media interviews, the story will be revealed in more detail. But I think he started off as a lumberjack, didn't like that too much, then became a security guard working a night shift. Happened to live next door, I think, to Romario Shepherd, who saw him playing cricket with a tape ball, thought he'd be quite handy, sent him along to Guyana training. Where it was confirmed that yes, he would in fact be
quite handy indeed. And,
next thing you know, he's getting Steve Smith out at the where was this test at Adelaide.
What, yeah. Did they do lumberjacking in the Caribbean, or was he in Canada? Well,
he's Guyanese, so the continent of South America. So it's a stratospheric rise.
Wow.
Now, there's someone who probably will put all his effort into being good, because, Jesus Christ, lumberjack, security guard, international cricketer. Where do I want to be? I think I'll be an international cricketer, thank you.
There have been on some odd career progressions. I mean, he certainly did well. Travis Head again.
Annoying fucker.
Well, he was my... I don't know who we voted for in our Christmas awards. I don't think we gave it to him in the end. I think you outvoted me, Bear, but I did argue that he'd won two world finals by turning up at
I think I
right
agreed
time.
With you in the end.
Oh, did you?
Reluctantly, of course.
Reluctantly. you wouldn't put this up there with the World Test Championship and the World Cup final, but, you know, he seems to be the man Australia fall back on when they really need him. Less so these days than, less so much now with Smith and Labuschagne, neither of whom shone particularly. Travis Head once again was magnificent.
Can you?
No, he does it in
120
style
of 280.
That's
the
other thing. You know, you could always rely on Steve Smith or Labuschagne, I suppose, to maybe score you 100, grind it out in some sort of fashion of whatever it's walking across your stumps and refusing to miss the ball, or just annoying the other team into bowling badly at you by screaming, "Wait there, no." And Travis Head is just, you know, flamboyant, good to watch, scores quickly. It's just a shame about the moustache, really.
Yeah, the moustache is fucking idiot.
Very Aussie moustache.
Yeah.
He should go for the full moustache and mullet, but I'm not sure these days when he takes his cap off, got quite the thickness of lustrousness of locks to get away with a mullet. I might be wrong.
Well, what do you make of Steve Smith, the opener? Is that a recipe for disaster?
I'm hoping so. Obviously.
He made about 12 in the first innings, didn't he? And then I can't remember what he got in the second. What did he get in the second innings?
12.
Can't have been. He only needed to make 20 something, didn't they? The 26. Yeah,
11.
I don't think personally, I don't think it's a good idea. You've got a man who's got a test average of whatever he is, batting wherever he has, and he's been quite happy there. And then what, you're going to stick him up at the top of the order? Has he ever been an opener? I mean, it just seems a bit crazy. I mean, personally, if he starts failing there and it gets in his head and he becomes a worse player, I'm not going to complain as an Englishman. He might succeed there. Who knows? He's a very good player. But it is weird that him, and to a certain lesser degree, because Labuschagne has been around a lot with a lot less time. But, you know, Steve Smith, the 2019 vintage and around that period was incredible. You know, you could hardly see him getting out. Players always come off that crest at some point and become almost mortal, and I think he's gone beyond that. Virat Kohli had a period where he didn't score a ton for God knows how many years. Root didn't score a ton for 2 years at a certain point in his career. And I mean, he's just come off that crest and he is a little bit more mortal, and you kind of think, oh Christ, you can get him out now, and maybe put him at the top of the order might not work for them. But
yeah, the
we shall see.
Invincibility.
Yeah, it's gone. Definitely gone.
Isn't quite there in the same way that it was. I don't think. Do we see anything other than a similarly brief test match for the second test? I can't remember where the second test is. I can tell you. I think it is. It's in Brisbane. Oh, not traditionally a place Australia a week, is it? Brisbane. You'd sort of expect probably more of the same, wouldn't you?
Unless there was some sledging done.
Well, yeah, who knows? Who knows? Let's come on to a couple of other things that have struck us this week. Obviously, of great interest to us was who's going to actually cover the India-England Test Series. Usual game of brinksmanship going on. It did end up being TNT, which I think quite a few of us predicted. It just seems odd that you've got what should be a global sporting event of international interest, and less than a week before, people are going, well, is it going to be on telly? How's it going to get there? It just seems to be all a bit...
This is kind of how
Heath Robinson,
BCCI
doesn't it?
Do business.
Yeah, it is, very much so.
Like, there's... I mean, I think probably even now, there's no certainty the five matches will be at the five venues they said they'll be at. It's... Well, it happened last time.
Well, hopefully the first one is Hyderabad, or else...
Well, no, I think...
Notes,
I think
for no reason.
I think that one will be fine, but you know, how will the grass-growing operation in the Himalayas have worked this year? It didn't work that well last year, did it? And they had to move that test. And
wasn't that great?
So, yeah, exactly. I think it's very much how it seems to work, the BCCI. I think in some ways the broadcaster of choice for them would have been Sky, but Sky and the BCCI, or whoever sells the rights to the BCCI, I think it's Star Sports, isn't it? Rights are actually bought by Star and then sold on. And this time they've been sold to a broker.
Pitch yes, International, who are like a global sports events agency. And obviously they're paying a bit of last minute brinksmanship to try and get a return from that. Price up.
Part of the reason you've even got a broker in there is because Star Sports tried to rip Sky off so badly one year that Sky refused to do business with them. Sky, I think, have said in recent weeks that they see the future of winter cricket broadcasting being tournaments, T20 tournaments, and not the England Test schedule. And you can see there's quite a divergence now, isn't there? Or, you know, if you look at where you'll be watching England as an England fan. It's not quite exclusively, but heading towards exclusively
India and Australia.
TNT. So the, Australia, I'm saying Australia, India, and the West Indies, their domestic rights or their broadcasting rights in the UK are now all held by TNT. So,
well, TNT have bought India for 5 years.
Yeah.
Indian mm-hmm. tests generically. The issue, I'm sure, is, as we know, you know, 4 o'clock UK starts doesn't make for the best television figures.
Which is why Sky aren't bothered.
So yeah. Sky have committed themselves to domestic, i.e. home-based test matches, which they've also mm-hmm. still got a long-term contract for, and they want to do the best of that. So in a way, there is now some comfort that whatever TNT paid pitch, the BCCI, I am sure, they've offloaded the risk because they've someone else has paid the money up front that they can then spend on other mm-hmm. things. The people with the risk have now got some return for that, and I don't know whether they've made a turn to profit on it.
The BCCI are fucking loaded. They don't really give a shit. And that's why they're trying to screw the British public or whoever's trying to buy the rights out of money. I think, you know, the domestic market is what matters to them, and they try and screw as much money out of who they can get money out of as possible. The BCCI are just a bunch of gangsters as far as I can figure out.
Allegedly.
Probably are in real life. I mean, Jay Shah looks like a real... You know.
Well, I think, you know, I maybe not go that far, but I think certainly on the broadcasting side, that is slightly more the attitude. I mean, mystified is probably the wrong word, but they don't... It surprises me that they don't seem to invest that much energy in the IPL as an international product. When you look at how international cricket is, and you look at the success that some American sports have had by pursuing that. Like the NFL, for example, has got a huge following across Europe now. So has the NBA. Yeah. You would think if you have the prime tournament for the prime format of a big global sport, you'd maybe want to tell people about that. But
yeah,
it doesn't seem to be part of their strategy. Domestic oriented.
Well, that's it. I think India is quite inward looking at the moment, actually. You know, you look at the structure of the political structure there with, you know, Hindu nationalism and all this sort of shit. It's very inward looking, and they got a massive population and they're their biggest market for cricket. So they look at themselves and go, who's this for? It's for us.
You can say all of the same things for America, though. Like, the biggest market for sports, period, is America. But they still try and... trying to sell us the NFL, aren't they? Like, it's still...
Yeah, but it's taken them a while to get there, you know.
True.
And India will come round to that. You know, there will be a point where, you know, the IPL will top out on its, you know, its TV rights, and people may get a little bit sick of it at home, and then they'll have to kind of renew it and do something else, and this will be it, and then they'll allow their Indian players to go and play in certain tournaments around the big ones. So, you know, they might say, right, you can go and play on the SAT20, and you might be out paying 100 in England, for example, and then they'll be looking to invest in those markets, and then they'll be trying to drag them into India, and then they'll realise that they can sell the IPL better. Because, I mean, you look at the IPL and where it is in England over the years, sometimes it's been on fucking Sony, you know, cooking channel 769 on Sky, you know.
Well, this is exactly what I mean, though.
You even know the number of that there.
I think there's, as much as like India not really doing the BCCI not doing a good job of, I guess, selling the IPL, I think there's also... there seems to be a reticence to buy in. I mean, I'll do like the IPL specifically, like from, I guess, you know, UK broadcasters to, you know, I mean, Sky have the TV rights now, and you know they cover it. But even just like sort of globally, commentators, the global like cricket punditry, the BBC, the coverage is weak.
I don't know. I would disagree with that.
I think there's like a real lack of knowledge of the player base, like that really wouldn't take that much effort to know about. You have people, I mean, there was people describing Shuri Kumar Yadav as the new kid on the block when he was 30.
Yeah, like, but they were the actual commentators employed to do the IPL on the TV in India.
Yeah.
Like they weren't like, there wasn't like some bloke writing in the
right,
Daily Mail.
But I mean, these are the global cricket pundits, right? And yeah, I think it's on them as well as.
But everyone knows Sunil Gavaskar's an idiot. Like, it's not
Danny Morrison you want to kill. That, you know.
I'm talking about the non-Indian commentators, right? You've got
Everyone works.
Kevin
Peterson.
That's
the point, isn't it?
That's like, yeah, they all do the rounds and they're terrible. And like, yeah. Why can't we?
I think they're buying in. I mean, like, I think Sky has bought in pretty heavily to the IPL, and that's partly probably why they're not interested in so much England Test cricket, because they have a cricket product. They have.
Well, they're interested in England Test cricket, but only those.
Yes. Yeah.
England.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the deal. TNT sees the opportunity.
Very interested when people will watch it, basically.
But people will watch the IPL. Like, they'll get 200,000 or hundreds.
Yeah. Sky. I mean, Sky do get the rights to that, so that's fine. Like, but you know, I mean, just sort of like general coverage, like BBC radio commentary, for example, the IPL. It's just like a random assortment of games. With no sort of thought about which ones are the important ones.
We actually did have some structure one year when we were doing it with you guys. We had a weekly show normally on the double header days, and we got our heads around actually making something of it. Other than that, it was when we could get a few people.
Yeah, so like
a self-propelled,
charitably funded, guerrilla radio show.
It was
doing the same as the BBC essentially.
Like, your weekly roundups were a fabulous highlight. I always enjoyed those. Whether we'll do that again this year, I don't know.
Quite enjoyed writing them as well.
The
little intros were great.
Look, it's going to be drinking up time. We are reaching the point at which we're having to kick people out, the Bishop and Bear.
Even though we've already said it's 9:30 in the morning, that's good.
10:30 now.
Yeah. But before you go, obviously we're going to have to ask you, as we've been asking everyone recently, really. You look at the stats for India. They've won every test series at home since, you know, Panesar and Swan in 2012. They've won every test series at home since then. They've won, which is 16 series, which is 34 matches, and they've lost 3. What chance do you give England, boys?
Of what?
Nil. Of getting... Of not losing the series. Let's put it that way.
Zero. Man, brilliant. You lot are pessimists. Fastball is gonna fucking.
I think England might win a game if India get a pitch slightly wrong. So if they make it slightly too easy to bat on, or they accidentally do what they did against Australia and put out one that's a complete lottery, then England have a chance of winning a game. But if they do their job with the pitches, then England haven't got a chance.
They will.
And you see, I think there'll be two or three pitches where it could be a lottery.
Are at different venues to normal, Jack, so there's a chance that someone doesn't quite get the memo right.
The thing is, I think there'll be a couple of pitches that'll be lotteries, and you've got as much chance with you certainly got more chance with Baz than you had doing what we did last time. I'm not guaranteeing that we'll win anything, but I think it's going to be fucking entertaining. And I think it's going to be pretty sure.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I don't think England have got a chance.
Okay.
I think this is what I predict will happen. Though I reckon there'll be 4 of the dirtiest pitches you've ever seen in your life. Test matches ending in 2 days, that sort of nonsense.
Yeah.
England will go, you know, they'll play Bazball and won't care. They won't listen to anyone who says do something differently.
This is what happened when Australia went there, though, isn't it? And then they ended up in Ahmedabad, where it was the flattest, featheriest
bed
ever.
I think
one draw in a series.
As like a token, thanks for coming, the last match of the series might be a complete run fest. Just so that it doesn't look too suspicious when we look
at
it.
That annoys me. Why
and so that Virat Kohli can get some runs.
Well, it's handy, but why after 4 games of 2 days and everyone watching a dead rubber at the end, why are you going to make me sit there for 5 days to watch some turnable ball draw? I'd much rather another 2-day game. It's just crazy.
Well,
this
so would
thing.
I.
Mean, like, ultimately, for England, I think, you know, Leach and Ahmed, who at the end of the day you know, a leg spinner and a left arm spinner ultimately move the ball the same way, by and large. They're not Swan and Panesar.
No, they're not.
Nowhere near Swan and Panesar. So backing Ashwin and Patel over those two, or
Jadeja,
Bashir, if you bring him in, Jadeja.
I think their
spinners will outgun our spinners.
Well, yeah, they will.
Your Jack's summary is about right.
And their batting lineup will probably outgun ours as well, because they know how to play.
I think we'll see a lot of Joe Root bowling.
I've seen Max. That is a lie, Max. Yeah. You give them fucking Bunsen burners, they're just as bad as anyone else.
Rohit Sharma's not.
Well, you look at
he'll
that.
Score last, a 50 and
I'd
win
say
the game.
This every time we go through this, but you look at that last Test series, and like four of those tests were won by one innings, and they happened to be Indian innings.
So basically,
they're far more likely to be an Indian innings than an English innings.
Well,
I think England have got Joe Root, and that's probably about it.
No, the thing is, playing basketball, I think you're spinning the wheels a little bit, and you've got a chance that someone gets lucky.
That's
get 60, and 60 might well be enough to win a game.
Maybe that's the excitement.
That's what I'm pinning my hopes on.
If it's 60, it's going to come from three people getting 20 rather than someone getting 60.
So no. I think it'll have to be someone getting 60 and everyone else getting, you know, three people getting 15 and, you know, other people getting
20. Got to close. Maybe Ben Stokes' knee surgery. Putting the shutters down on the bar, boys.
Maybe Ben Stokes' knee surgery will also be brain surgery. Maybe that's
the Bear and Max can go to the nightclub.
The Bears on Fantasy Island, and you two are basically going that apart from the batting and bowling, England are in with a chance. If I vaguely summarise what I think I've heard. All right then, fair enough. Guys, thank you very much. It's been a delight to have you in the Bishop of Bear.
Indeed.
Hopefully we'll have you on for some of the Indian series.
It'd be nice to see, but I do understand that work does get in the way, unfortunately.
People don't work at 4 o'clock, but they have to be awake to do work when they
exactly.
time. This is going to be our challenge during this series, I think. Guys, thank you all very much. Thank you everybody for coming and having a drink with us. Well, the next time we talk to you, I think it's going to be for some live cricket rather than a Bishop of Bear podcast. Thanks to NordVPN, and we will see you. Cheers.
Bye.
All
ciao. Bye.
And don't forget, you can Patreon us at patreon.com/gorillacricket if you really like us, because that's always helpful.
Revolutionary cricket commentary.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.